nifty dope move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Well, we may be in normal, but this is not your normal sports talk show. This is the Red Zone, live from the campus of Illinois State University. Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm Anthony Freddy, joined alongside my co-hosts this evening, Joey Dwyer and Scott Rosalvo. We've got Scott on right now. How are you doing, Scott, tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm ready to talk sports.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun show. We got a good show planned, like always. We're going to open up, talk about some Redbird gymnastics. We had a Redbird gymnast with us. Then we will talk about Trey Roberson, and he had a big signing with the Chicago Bears. Then we will talk about Kobe's legacy with our news and sports guests. And then we will finish with probably the best segment in sports radio history, the three up, three down.
And I'm ready to redeem myself on that because I've had some very, very, very stressful and unfortunate weeks. So I'm ready to get going.
Past couple
that.
Weeks, and Steve's like, always joking around with us. He's like, you know, you're enjoying being at the top for now, but I'm going to be 4-2 all these weeks going forward, so I'll take you guys on, no problem.
Yeah, Steve is very good at that stuff, and I'm ready to come back. We got a lot of weeks left. I'm ready to come back and kind of take over the throne.
I think so. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to be live with Cameron Topp from Redbird Gymnastics. Stay with us. You're listening to the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. This is the Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. We are here in Fell Hall at ISU. Now we got Joey Dwyer with us. Joey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. I'm ready to get going. We've got an exciting show, so let's just hop into it. I'm pumped. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of exciting things that are happening with Redbird Athletics. The Redbird men's basketball team, they got their first win last night since the turn of the calendar. That's pretty exciting. Redbird track and field, they've been doing good. And another team that's been doing pretty well, Redbird Gymnastics. They've won their last two home meets, and we are joined by junior gymnast Cameron Topp. Cameron, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, the gymnastics team, as we mentioned, has been on a roll. You have won the past two home meets. You first beat SEMO. I believe it was like a half-point victory. And then you were able to pull out the victory against Northern Illinois by 0.2. So, just talk about those two meets and kind of getting that win streak going.
Yeah, the last two weekends have been really exciting with two wins in a row. And it's just been really nice seeing the team work through adversity and, like, finally work together as a whole unit. And we have a lot of talent on the team this year.
And you guys are traveling down to SEMO, taking them on for the second time this year. Are you expecting the same outcome? What's the mentality of the team going into this next matchup?
I think the mentality of the team this weekend is pretty confident because we already won against SEMO a couple weekends ago. So I think we're just trying to keep the momentum going and, like, score even higher this weekend.
I think so. Head coach Bob Conkling was saying in his preview that it's going to be a challenge since SEMO now has the home field advantage, but he thinks the team is up to the challenge based on the way that you guys have performed. So.
Yes, I totally agree. I've been watching them in practice, and everyone's so confident in the routines, and we're ready to go show off what we have and just hit.
I always like when you guys are doing the floor routines during the meets. You guys are always dancing with one another because you guys see the routine so much during practice, so you're always there to kind of give them support. I really like that. What are some of the events that you like to compete in as a gymnast?
Actually, my favorite event to compete is the floor exercise because I get to show off my personality, and I just love tumbling.
Awesome.
And so obviously you're here with us right now. The team is on its way to Missouri, and you're not going with because of an injury. And we were talking a little bit about it before. How do you, as an as a collegiate athlete, work through that when there you get hurt so early in the season, and so you have to kind of rehab while the rest of the team is really getting into midseason shape? How does that change your mentality and your outlook for the season?
Yeah, it was really difficult when I injured my ankle, and it was totally unexpected. But I think the biggest part is just having a positive attitude. Can't get down on yourself because there's nothing you can do, and just work as hard as you can in rehab and try to come back strong next season.
And so just looking ahead, do you have any idea of what the timetable looks like as far as your return? Is it likely at all you get back this semester, or are you going to have to kind of wait and see it out maybe next semester?
So right now we're looking at a 9-month recovery plan. Ooh, so I'm trying to get back in next season.
Okay.
Well, that is good that you're a junior, so you're going to have your at least part of your senior season to kind of get that going. I think it doesn't start till about January, so you'll probably be ready to go and kind of get yourself going, work possibly some of the rust off. So what do you think, or what's the team culture kind of like on meet days, I guess, starting with the home meets? Or let's start on the road. Your team, they're going on a roughly 4-hour bus ride, and you guys have traveled to Michigan State and New Hampshire. So what's kind of going through your mind? Like, how do you guys keep the vibe going on the bus?
Well, the first thing we need to make sure is that everyone remembered everything when we came back. And sometimes that's an issue, but it's kind of funny. But once we're on the bus, we just have a lighthearted attitude, and we just goof around. And a lot of times we take naps and just relax and try to conserve our energy.
And I think that's a very universally human problem to have, going on a trip and then forgetting something. Like, I'm sure some of your teammates have forgotten a toothbrush before.
Oh, yeah. It happens all the time. Like, one of my roommates asked, do you have any hair ties? Because she always forgets her hair ties, so I have to pack extra.
And so we obviously the MIC championship is going to be held in Redbird Arena this year, so no traveling for that. But is there, looking ahead to that point in the season, is there a sense of calm knowing that when you compete, you're going to be backed by your home crowd and you're going to have that home court advantage?
I think it does give a little bit of calm because it takes the pressure off of traveling to a new place and getting used to the equipment. But also there's a level of, like, different excitement because we're in our home territory and we want to do our best for our school.
And it's going to be at Redbird Arena. You guys previously competed in one meet at Redbird Arena, ironically enough, against Southeast Missouri State. So how was that, competing at Redbird Arena? Because usually you're competing in Horton Fieldhouse, so this definitely must have been a different change of scene for you guys.
Oh, yeah. It was totally different than Horton, but a way different experience and way better. Redbird Arena is such a good facility, and it just makes us that much more excited to go out there and compete and do the best we can.
So as someone who may not know as much about collegiate gymnastics as you or my co-host, can you just run through for me? So you guys, when you beat Northern Illinois in your last meet, it was 193.625 to 193.400.
Yes.
And so for some of our listeners who may not be as well versed in collegiate gymnastics, how does the scoring for that work, and how do you add that all up?
Okay, so the scoring may sound a little confusing, but so there's four events, and for each event you want to put up six athletes. So you're going to compete in the top five scores of the six athletes on each event contribute to the team total. So, and your scores are based on, like, if you bend your knees or if you flex your foot, like, that could take off, a, like, half a point or, like, a tenth. So it all adds up.
That is interesting. And I've seen some of the officials discussing at the meets, and I didn't know too much about the scoring either, and we're just kind of going through our heads like, what could they possibly be docking off for? So what is it, like half a point maybe if, let's say, you're on the beam and you don't have, like, a strong landing, or maybe you, like, almost slip, but let's say you're able to keep your balance, like, that won't, that shouldn't hurt you too much.
A balance check? It depends on how big of the balance check you have. So if it's just a tiny bobble, it'll probably be, like, a tenth. But if it's, like, you're swinging your arms, it could take up to 2 to 3 tenths.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's a huge difference.
And so that's, so that is, I can see how that would create a very, like, perfectionist environment.
Yes.
Where everything you have to do, it has to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing that, you guys compete with such, a tenacity for being perfect while you're still able to have this lighthearted atmosphere outside of the competition. I think that's a really admirable thing.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool to watch. And, we're friends with a bunch of other people on different teams, so it's just really nice to see your close friends at different meets on different teams.
I think that's awesome that, you know, you're friends with some of the people on different teams, because I bet you grew up maybe competing against them when you were maybe being a junior gymnast. But what I always found interesting about gymnastics is it's not like basketball or football where if you can hold your opponent down and make them weaker, then you guys will be able to win. It's just you guys have to perform your best and hope it's better than your opponent's performance.
Yes, that is very true.
And so let's just take a quick look ahead. We touched on it earlier. The team is heading down to SEMO right now. And just looking ahead towards the competition, and towards the rest of the season, I could add even, is there two back-to-back wins at meets now. Do you feel like the team is starting to get a momentum moving forward or getting into a flow?
Yes, I totally agree with that. The first meet of the season, we got all our hiccups out of the way, and each meet we're trying to build on from the last and hopefully improve our team score every single meet.
You guys, I believe in last year's conference meet, you were tied for second. So do you think that with all the kinks you're able to work out and with this win streak that you're confident you could try and get a first place finish?
Yes, I believe our team has a lot of potential and talent, and it just takes us being confident and knowing that we're going to hit our routine to pull off the win.
And this is a little off topic, but we were talking beforehand. We were just before the interview started. And I was just reading some of the prep that Ferretti wrote, and he's got when the team does travel, how do you pass the time on the bus? And you were talking about how you just watched The Office just recently. So now that you're not traveling with the team, do you find that you have more or less time to devote to watching TV shows?
Well, I definitely could make time to watch TV, but I probably shouldn't do that. And even though I'm injured right now, I still have to go to all the practices and weights and just support my teammates in the best way I can.
All right. So it sounds like you only have time for maybe an episode or two a night. Oh, yeah, that's fair. I think it's good that you still are getting out to practices, and obviously you still have to go through that rehab even though that injury is pretty fresh. But, yeah, I think that's a delicate thing where you're having to rehab but still being supportive and focusing on your teammates as well.
Yeah.
And what made you want to take on gymnastics as a sport?
I was actually put in gymnastics at a really young age. I started when I was 2 in mommy and me classes because I was a very hyper kid, and I'm still very hyper. And I just grew to love the sport, and I just continued with it.
And what made you, when you were choosing colleges, what made you choose ISU to continue your athletic and academic career?
I chose ISU because I love the campus. I love how clean it is. I love how everything is so close together, but it still feels big. And I also chose ISU to do gymnastics because I absolutely love the coaches. Like, they treat you so good. They, like, have your best interests in mind. And that's really hard to find with college athletics sometimes.
And we're running out of time, so we got to wrap this up quick. You were talking about how much you love ISU, and obviously we all agree because we're all here. Three of us are juniors. We got I guess Jose in the corner over there is a junior too. We got Scott, who's a senior. And we talk about this all the time with a bunch of the different athletes who come on. But what was you talked about the coaches. Do you think that Illinois State Athletics just has a different environment? Because we hear the same thing from a lot of different athletes from a wide array of sports, is that they feel like the coaches really care about them and their success. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a common theme throughout all Illinois State Athletics?
I do think it's a common theme, because I believe our coaches focus not only on being successful in our sport, but also like just setting us up to be successful in life.
Yeah, I would definitely think so. Your head coach, Bob Conkling, assistant coach and recruiting coordinator, Chris Murris, am I pronouncing that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Megan Harrington is an assistant coach. She, if I'm not mistaken, I believe she was promoted to assistant coach fairly recently at the beginning of January.
Mm-hmm. She was.
And I believe she's also trying to pursue a master's degree as well. I was reading a little bit on the bio as I was doing some research. She's trying to pursue that, so I bet that must be kind of a handful for her. But that, I guess that does show how dedicated she is to the mm-hmm. sport, like the rest of the coaches. So I think you guys are pretty lucky to have a trio like those coaches.
Yeah, I agree.
And your coaches and the rest of your team, as we've said, are heading down to Southeast Missouri State. That starts tomorrow at 6:30. You can catch the radio broadcast on ESPN+. But right now we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking a little Trey Roberson here on the Red Zone, 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And that is Redbird quarterback Brady Davis bringing us back to the Red Zone here, which is a perfect transition into our next segment. We're talking about some professional football and Redbird football. But first of all, how about Cammy Top? That was a great interview, and it was awesome having her on the show.
And it was also very fun learning, because as I said in the interview, I don't know a whole lot about gymnastics. I did it. I was very relatable when she said that she was put in gymnastics classes as a kid because she was super hyper. That's what my mom did to me,
really?
Too, until I started playing flag football. So I could
and we see your football skills, so you know, maybe you should have stuck with gymnastics.
Oh. Hey, all I'm saying is Scotty, I could dust you one on one.
Man.
You know, Scott doesn't quite have the legs he used to.
Oh,
so I think I could dust him. But
you always gotta break into the show with a little friendly banter.
Yeah.
I'm saying is every text, my girlfriend listens every week.
Okay.
And every week I get a text, she goes, "Do you always have to be so mean to Scott?" She's always like, "Why are you so mean to Scott?"
It's because she doesn't see what happens off air.
I know. She's
only hears what happens on air.
I tell her, and Ferretti, last year, there was one day we were having some debate.
Oh, last semester?
And last semester.
Yeah, with Hector.
And with Hector, and Scott and Hector were arguing for 15 minutes on the air. And then we had to close the show. We went like 3 minutes over. We had to close the show, went off air, and they're still yelling at each other.
I think I remember that because I was in the newsroom for some nights, and then I just see you guys ending the show, and you guys are just arguing.
Just,
I'm like,
they're
my
just
goodness.
Yelling at each other, and I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh my god, guys. So if you ever wonder why I have to be mean to Scott, it's to put him in his place a little bit.
It's all
so
in
that
good
doesn't
fun.
Happen again.
It's all in good fun.
But anyway, let's move on.
I think we shall move on and talk about Trey Roberson. So he is a former Redbird standout quarterback. He spent a lot of his time in the Canadian Football League with the Calgary Stampeders, and now he was just picked up by the Chicago Bears.
And you want to know what I think is cool about this entire situation is, not only did he go to Illinois State, and we're big ISU mm-hmm. football guys, is he transitioned from quarterback, played quarterback here, is pretty successful. It didn't work out for him to be a quarterback. He didn't really make it to the NFL with that in that position. But he went to the Canadian Football League as a cornerback, and he was a star. Yeah, I believe he had seven interceptions last season. He tore it up. I believe he was in Calgary, tore it up there. And now he got signed to his very own Chicago Bears team. And, guys, this brings up some very valuable questions. We were talking about cap space. We're talking about a lot of guys leaving the Bears. Prince Amukamara, I think his position's up for grabs now.
And you got to think, too. If you think about the Bears' DB situation, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got two guys who are absolute locks. Our Pro Bowlers, Kyle Fuller, Eddie Jackson, they're not going anywhere. Then you've got the other safety, HaHa Clinton Dix. And that's one that fans are split on. I like him. I wish we had a guy who could play strong safety so we can move Eddie Jackson back to free safety because that's where he thrives. But Eddie Jackson is such a versatile athlete that it doesn't really matter. And then, like Scotty said, we have Prince Mukamara and then our nickelback, Buster Skrine. And you have to think that Trey Roberson is challenging one of those guys, if not both. Buster Skrine had an all right season in his inaugural season with the Bears, but he did get toasted a couple times. And so I think either of those guys' job are on the line right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would definitely think so with someone as talented as Trey Roberson. I mean, being able just to transition from quarterback to cornerback, and as you mentioned, Scott, he was tearing it up in the Canadian Football League, and I believe the Calgary Stampeders won the...
The Grey Cup.
Yep.
But I will say, I was thinking, I was talking to my dad about this, because I went home yesterday to just get lunch with the fam, and I was talking to my dad about this, and he was like, remember what happened the last time the Bears got somebody from the CFL? Referring to Mark Trestman.
Oh, boy.
That did not go so well for Chicago. So a little apprehensive. Obviously, it's a different situation.
Of course.
Yeah, because Trestman was a coach. Now we're getting an actual player.
I think the thing that I want to kind of brush up on that, it's a very good point. Your dad is a very knowledgeable guy, a very good, successful
radio. My dad loves Scott. My dad texted me. He texted me last week, and he's like, or he calls me after the show, and he's like, hey, good job on the interview. Try to make your questions shorter like Scott's.
Ooh,
and I'm like,
wow.
I'm like, geez.
Me and Joey talk about this all the time because I really take what your dad says, you know, personally, and I take it to heart because he's really good at what he does. And I'm always trying to learn off him and many other people. But one thing that he did bring up there with the Canadian League that kind of makes me a little worried is the game speed is tremendously slower.
I mean, it really
if
is.
You look at the Canadian Football League compared to the...
And it's way spread out, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yes, he was successful. He was a top prospect coming from the Canadian Football League. He had 7 interceptions. He was, like I said, the top prospect. He's coming to the Bears. He went to Illinois State. So there's a lot of things that are cool about the story, mm-hmm. but a lot of the breaking things are saying that he's going to be the highest paid CFL to NFL transition guy in a long time since the Dolphins. So I think the main thing here is he's very athletic, and he has shown with going from quarterback to cornerback that he is versatile and that he's athletic and he can make the change. But I don't know. I like Eddie Tolliver. I think he came in. I think he played very well towards the end of the year. Prince, he had a very good year in 2018. 2019, he struggled. You brought up Buster Skrine. Buster Skrine, yes, he did get burned a couple times. But if you look at the guys he got burned by, I think you're bringing up like the Packer game where he got burned by Devontae Adams and it was
for a touchdown. Which Devontae Adams is an absolute animal.
he's a top 10 receiver, special talent. So Buster Skrine, I still have faith in him. I still really like Buster Skrine in the nickel. I think he plays it pretty
solid.
But
I think that's a place where you can move Kevin Tolliver over too.
And have him play the nickel and then have...
he's got the size as a nickelback. He's got the speed. You put Roberson out at corner, and I think that's a much more formidable because... Prince Mukamara is kind of slow and he's old.
Yes.
Right?
Well, yeah. He's 27, I'd say. 27, 28. Maybe 29. I don't know. I always get the...
Because he had a long... or at least what I thought was a long career with the Giants before he came over. He's 30.
He's 30. Okay. Yeah, I knew he wasn't like super old.
Which
he's
defensive back years is... He's getting
old. Yeah. He is, but he's towards the end of his prime. I don't think he's washed. I'd say 33 is old for being a cornerback just because you have to be so quick and agile.
Yeah.
30 is not young in any means, but he's not – I don't think he's worth the contract.
Also,
not right now,
I just,
not with all the pieces
I just looked
need.
Him up. His kids' names are awesome.
Let's hear them.
These are his siblings.
Okay.
We've got Peace Amukamara, Precious Amukamara, Promise Amukamara, Passionate Amukamara and Princess Amukamara.
That's all awesome. My that is awesome.
That's high quality name planning.
Man,
right
I might
there.
Need to go change my that's, name after that. My goodness.
Prince's parents, they had it planned. That's when you got a spreadsheet and you're like, okay, this baby's got to come this time. And so that's impressive. But getting back to Prince on the field, he, His spot's going to be up for grabs, and I think this is the same thing people are talking about with Mitch. You got to have some competition to bring out the best in guys, and I think we'll either see Trey Roberson elevate his game to the next level or Prince elevate his.
Let me bring this up really quick. I was breaking down, because I love the Bears. I love football, and I love breaking down, you know, contracts and salary caps. I was breaking down the NFL salary caps and the Bears salary cap. I think people don't understand how much money the Bears really have. If they get rid of Trey Burton, who that's another thing that we got to bring up, is if they get rid of Trey Burton, they get rid of Prince, we know Kyle Long is gone, and maybe one more big name, Taylor Gabriel. You have those four guys, we're looking at about like $40 million in cap space that we could have. We have 2 second-round draft picks that aren't going to cost you a lot of money there either. You can look, I was thinking maybe you can look for a corner there, but now that you sign one, now maybe you take a quarterback if, you know, like Eason or something falls, maybe Jacob Fromm. I don't like Jacob Fromm, but I know a lot of people have been circling around that name. But yeah, you need competition, and there's so many things the Bears could do. Obviously, last season they went 8-8, it let a lot of people down, and they just weren't successful. But I'm not gonna lie, it made for this offseason to be very, very exciting. Whether it's the draft, whether it's signing in the free agency pool, whatever it may be, it's gonna be exciting. I'm ready for it. So, I don't know. It's a cool thing. It's a really big thing that's going on in the offseason, not just with the Bears, but you know, kind of talking about Greg Olsen. We saw that he didn't sign with the Panthers.
We did. We just got that notification.
The Bears are in much need of a tight end.
I feel like they should bring him back, because when he was here, he did, I think, a relatively good job of being a tight end. We haven't really had that like breakout tight end since we got rid of Greg Olsen. And when we got rid of him, the Panthers were just exploding with him.
Of course.
And now it's like, but it's like, is he too old? But the Bears need.
They need it. They need help. They need help.
Trey Burton's not the answer, and Adam Shaheen is
definitely
not the answer.
Definitely not the answer.
Yeah, we got to see what's going to happen. Maybe Thaddeus Moss, but we'll see. We're going to take a break,
Thaddeus.
Though. Yeah, that'd be really nice. We will take a break, and when we come back, we will be joined by our news and sports guest, Jose Sandoval. Stick with us. You're listening to The Red Zone on the pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. I think we are having a great day so far. We're having a great show. As we're over halfway done with it. The Chicago Bulls, though, Jose, they've had a rough stretch. It's either they're winning games or losing games. They had a tough overtime loss, as you mentioned, to the Indiana Pacers. And it was Victor Oladipo's first game in just over a year, and he showed up.
He really did. Honestly, you know, Joey right now is flexing in the studio because he's a Pacers fan. But, you know, the Bulls' lack of consistency and the lack of ability to be able to finish games and close them and hold the lead have really been holding them off from being able to be a playoff team.
Absolutely. And there's just so many good teams in the NBA this year that are, it's making it so much fun to watch compared to the last, like, you know, I'd say even the last like 8 years. So just having all these teams come out and actually have players that are so, you know, like, I don't know, I'd say how many teams would you say are in the league right now that can compete for the title?
I think, to be quite honest with you, I think there's probably maybe 4 to 6 teams in the league right now that could compete, because it's such an even playing field. Although you do have Milwaukee, who right now are, I believe they're 41-6 right now, and I believe they hold the best record in the NBA right now. But then again, like, it's an any given night where they could lose.
Of course.
They can lose the game. And I mean, you have the Lakers, obviously, at 36-10 in the West. The West is always, a lot of their teams are always going to contend. So, I mean, you have the Lakers, the Clippers, Denver could always get there. I mean, you have Houston, who is supposed to be there, but, I mean, their expectations this season have not been that great. But you have Milwaukee, Toronto, even Miami, who surprisingly have been a really great team this season. And, Scott, you kind of laughed a little bit at that.
I get it. They're 32-15. They're having a good regular season. But we all know when it comes down to it and they make the playoffs, this is the one sport that is not like hockey. It's not like baseball. It's not like any team that's a wild card team or a poor ranked team can really make a splash. It's just been proven, because basketball is just not that kind of sport. You look at the Lakers. You look at the Clippers. You know, you look at Milwaukee. You look at even the Raptors, I mean, aren't even that solid. In second place.
I just want to say, the last time we talked about the NBA was early.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was early in the season.
Yeah, no,
and
man,
I said, we can pull back, yeah, but I said, watch out for the Heat, because they're going to be legit. And third,
I can't believe you got that right.
Third in the East right now, they look legit. Tyler Hero is nuts, dude. He's absolutely nuts.
They're just not a team that I see making a splash. And the reason I say that, first of all, can we address something really quick, Joey? I want to know, why are you a Pacers fan?
Because
you're from Iowa.
Yeah, I'm from Iowa. My dad's from Chicago. And so I'm everything Chicago, but he has no interest in the NBA. So I wasn't a basketball fan growing up until I got into high school. And then I was like, all right, if I'm going to do this like sports journalism thing, I got to get into basketball. Mm-hmm. And so I'd always watched college basketball, but I was like, all right, I need an NBA team. And I love 30 for 30s. 30 for 30s are like the documentaries. I will watch them I'll watch them to go to sleep. And one of my favorite 30 for 30s is Winning Time, which is the Reggie Miller one. And I fell in love with just Indiana basketball and the whole atmosphere surrounding it. I love Reggie Miller. I have a Reggie Miller jersey. I think he's sick. He's a great commentator too. And so that just like made me love the Pacers.
Okay.
And then
so there's a good reason behind it.
Yeah, yeah. So like and that. Then I've liked them for like what now 8 years. So I don't think and they've always been like a 7-4 seed team. So it's not like a bandwagon, you know.
Yeah.
So now that Vic is back, I think it's only up from here.
And there is a connection to the Missouri Valley Conference on the Pacers team. Former standout for the Missouri State Bears, Alize Johnson, is on that team for the Pacers. He's been trying to get some playing time. He wears number 24. And in the wake of the tragic events that have happened, he said that he is going to keep wearing 24. I think that is a good choice. I mean, people are like, oh, you shouldn't wear 24 because you got to honor him. But people are like, you know, you got to honor him in any way you can.
And this is a subject you just brought up because of all the – you brought up what you said, all the tragic events that have kind of happened. And, Jose, that was one reason why you came on was because you have a lot of knowledge about that. And I'm sure everybody does. But you personally, mm-hmm. you want to come on and kind of give your opinion. I know you being such a big basketball guy.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've grown up watching Kobe Bryant. And I'm sure he's like an icon to you. So if you can kind of break that down for us and tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, as we all know, Kobe, you know, had a – illustrious 19-year career with the Lakers, although he was originally drafted by the Hornets in 1996 with the 13th overall pick, was eventually traded over to the Lakers for Vlade Divac, which is
the Hornets did not get the upside on that.
I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Kobe, his first 2 years in the league weren't that great because mm-hmm. he was sat a lot for the most of the time. But I think as... You know, because he was drafted into the league in 1996. And around that time, like most of us here.
That's my birth year.
Yeah, that's your birth year. I was born in 97.
Yeah.
Freddie, when were you born?
I was in 99.
98 for Joey.
6, 7, 8, 9. Wow.
And you want to know what that shows? The fact that I'm 23 and you guys are 22. Anthony, you're 21?
20.
You're 20. Okay. The fact that it shows how relevant Kobe's playing days still were. And he was drafted when we were born. I mean, that just shows how much his legacy really, you know, carried on. And like everybody, every time I played basketball, and it just even with like, you know,
like
a mini hoop,
scrambled piece
you
of
say
paper,
Kobe,
something
and you shoot the ball
in the
you
trash.
Know?
Yeah.
And I was talking to one of my buddies from back home who's not even into sports, and we were just talking on Sunday. But he's really smart. He's a film major. He's gonna make documentaries. And so we were just talking about it, and he said something I thought was really insightful. He's like, Kobe Bryant was the first and maybe the most transcendental athlete of our generation. People who this kid didn't watch basketball growing up, but he mm-hmm. knew who Kobe Bryant was. He knew who he played for, and because it was Kobe Bryant and the LA Lakers. And so his legacy is the fact that he was able to cross that barrier. Like we have guys now with like Tom Brady and LeBron James who are these big sports figures, right? But Kobe Bryant was more than a sports figure to so many people. He was this worldwide icon, and we've seen so many things after his death. L. Duncan did a very powerful piece for ESPN.
I saw that they were talking about their daughters, and how I believe he met him at the ESPYs just briefly and just having that daughter's conversation. And you wouldn't think of like someone like Kobe being the high caliber athlete that he was, but just having just a personal conversation about being a dad and saying, hey, you know, I could have five daughters if I wanted to. Like, just saying, you know, how much he even, like, you know, cares about his kids and, you know, just how, shows how personable he could be.
And it was everybody has stories like that. He was always such a personable guy. And we've seen so many people come forward and give these super touching tributes. And it truly is just heartbreaking for him and his daughter and everybody else, all the other families who are on that helicopter.
I think what it shows is it shows that Kobe Bryant was bigger than basketball. Kobe Bryant was bigger than sports. And the reason that I say that is you look at guys like Saquon Barkley, who could hands down be one of the best running backs with the year that he had with the Giants. Obviously, his last year wasn't very good, but you see all the stuff that he's brought up with the Mamba mentality. He came up with that very sentimental speech that he gave him. It was about a minute and a half long. If you've never seen that, look it up on YouTube. He talks about, you know, how much he's really inspired him. And he even talked about it on an interview on ESPN, just even now that, you know, Kobe's gone, that he's going to live up to him and it's going to make him push even harder to really carry that torch. And every athlete has been saying that. And that's just in the sports world. You look at outside of the sports world, you look at comedians, you look at other influencers, you look at people that didn't even watch sports, play sports. Everybody knows Kobe Bryant because of his mentality, because of his work ethic, because of his, you know, the way he talks. And he just lifted spirits up and he lifted people up. And that's something that is just, that's bigger than life itself. That's the people that we need in this world that make people push forward.
And Jose, you obviously are, out of the four of us in here, you're the biggest basketball fan. We talk ball all the time when we're in the newsroom. But I just am curious to know, what's like a Kobe memory that stands out in your mind as far as when you reflect on his career or even post-career or just him as a person? What's something that stands out to you as a huge NBA fan?
So as you guys know, obviously I'm a diehard Bulls fan to life, but there are certain players that captivate me and make me want to watch. And Kobe was one of those because my brother got to see MJ growing up and had the dominant reign in the 90s. To me, Kobe is my MJ. And mm-hmm. I feel like he was that for many of us because he was an exact replica of what MJ was. And I think he's the greatest player, in my opinion, from watching the NBA from ever since I was a young boy up to now. He is the greatest player that I have ever seen with my own two eyes.
And that kind of brings up, let me ask you a question. This is a question that's been circling around social media. And I've seen a lot of professional athletes tweet this out. And I know we're in a time of mourning, and it's a time of everybody being sad. But a lot of people have been saying, you know, for the last however many years, 10, 15 years, we've been saying who's the better basketball player, who's the best in the world. Is it Kobe? Is it LeBron? Is it Jordan? That argument ends now because of Kobe's passing. And does this change? You say he was your Michael Jordan.
It was my Michael Jordan. And I feel like, you know, for a lot of the younger players who are coming into the NBA now, like, LeBron is their MJ. LeBron is their Kobe. Mm-hmm. Like, for some of the guys that were in the league for a while, you know, like, they didn't get to, you know MJ and, like, even watch MJ. But Kobe was their MJ. So, like, yeah. He influenced the next generation. And
yeah, exactly. I mean, you just see some of the players leaving, you know, the touching tributes to Kobe saying, you know, I picked up basketball. I wanted to be in the NBA because of Kobe.
And they're just the tributes that we've seen from around the league, as far as all the teams taking the 24-second shot clock violation.
Or 8-second.
Yeah, in his honor. Or just what we've seen, the moments of silence. And I saw this really powerful picture from a moment of silence before the Houston Rockets game that Sunday night. And it was Austin Rivers and two other Houston players flanking him on either side. And it was just such a... That was an instance where a picture spoke a thousand words, and I would do an injustice trying to fully explain it, but it was just, you could see the crowd in the background, you could see the emotion on everybody's face, and it truly was just heartbreaking to see how this affected so many people.
And I think the thing is that's really important too, and I have another question for you, Jose. We were going over some things, and we kind of talked about a little bit off air. We know that the NBA logo has been around for a very long time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A main thing that's circling that is a question, do you think because of what happened, and not just because of what happened, I mean, this would be obviously the biggest way you can honor someone, I think, in my opinion. Do you think that maybe the NBA logo could change to Kobe Bryant now?
That is a tough one For those of you guys who don't know, the logo is Jerry West. And although the NBA won't fully acknowledge it, because Jerry West, he actually doesn't get any money from being the logo. Mm-hmm. They say that, you know, they were just taken from someone else random. But in terms of changing the logo to Kobe, like, I'm 50-50 on it. I believe, in a way, yes, like, they should change it. But at the same time, there has been so many great players that have come into the NBA that have influenced the league and to changed it and how it is now. So I think it would be a difficult thing for them to change it. Although, like, I could see them changing it to Kobe, but at the same time, it would be a difficult thing because although he did influence the game, but there were so many great players way ahead of this time. Like, Bill Russell could arguably be a logo for how he changed.
Larry Bird,
Magic.
Doug Collins.
Like, you have so many different people who could arguably be the logo.
Yeah, I think so. And he did receive, I think, a really cool honor and a unique honor. Not only did he have his number retired by the Lakers, he had both of his numbers retired because he had such a profound impact on the Lakers organization. And as you mentioned, Joey, more than the NBA, that he's got both 8 and 24 hanging from the rafters at Staples Center for as long as the Lakers will stand.
Scotty, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I was just going to say that's exactly a testament to his legacy. I think more than anything, though, what I get from this when I look at how he'll be remembered is just what happened and how he lived his life before his passing and after his retirement, and just devoting himself to being a dad. I was reading, I've been reading stuff about this all week,
yeah.
And somebody wrote an article that said he was more than just a dad that used his money. He really devoted his time to all of his daughters and really showed them that he was there for them and was this consummate role model. And so I think that's the most tragic part about this because, yeah, we did lose an NBA legend, but we lost a very great man and a great father and one of his daughters, and it's just awful.
Yeah. And we're running a little short on time here, and we could talk about this for a very long time. But before we do cap off and before we kind of finish talking about it, I do want to pay tribute to the 9 other victims that passed away in the horrific crash as well, mm-hmm. because there were other children and there were other families and there were other parents and there were other daughters and that were on that plane or mm-hmm. helicopter, excuse me, that are no longer here anymore. And I get that Kobe Bryant's the big icon and obviously his daughter too, Gianna, are mm-hmm. the big names because of their name. They're being brought up the most, but there were also some other deaths that meant just as much to other people as theirs. So I do want to play tribute to them as well. I'm not going to bring up their names on air, but there are 9 other victims that, our thoughts are with them as well.
Yeah, there was even a JUCO baseball coach that just everyone in the baseball world really loves. So, yeah, just paying tribute to that. Like, everyone, when they think of this, they're going to Kobe, but there are 7 other victims other than the Bryant family that have also lost one. And the wound that we're feeling from Kobe is how those families are feeling about losing their loved ones. So it's been difficult, but I think we're going to be mourning for a while. But the question that you brought up about the NBA logo, that transitions us perfectly into the Twitter question for the Red Zone question of the week. It is, do you think the NBA should change their logo to Kobe? We're going to post that, but we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have the 3 up, 3 down. You're listening to the Red Zone.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMT.
Going up, coming down.
It's the 3 up, 3 down.
3 up, 3 down.
Only on the pulse of Redbird Nation. 103.3 WZMT.
And welcome back to the Red Zone. It is time for our favorite segment in the show, the 3 up, 3 down. So the way that this works, in case we have some first-time listeners, we pick 6 men's college basketball games. 3 of them have to be favorites to win the game. 3 of them have to be underdogs. We pick 1 Missouri Valley game, since the Birds are in the Valley, and one of our up picks cannot be over 80%. And taking a look at the standings, at the bottom, we have the guest and Scott at 4-8. Now, I have to admit, though, Nick Empower did a great job trying to bring the guest back because it was 0-6 the first week, and he went 4-2.
Yeah. The guests have had a long history of not being good at picking teams. You want to know what? I know I'm struggling. I know I'm at 4-8. I get that. But you want to know why I'm at 4-8? Because I am picking these teams with my heart. And if that's going to give me a better record, true. That's fine. But we have a lot of weeks left, and I'm coming back. Like, I hope you guys know I'm coming for that throne.
And in third place, we got Joey. He's 5-7. Steve Cease, 8-4. And then I am up top at 9-3. And I couldn't even believe the week that I had. I went 6-0. I'm still in shock over that.
Big man over here. Big man at the head of the table.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. But Steve Cease, I'm sure he's listening. He's like, yeah, enjoy your time at the top because it's going to come crumbling down when I keep going 4-2. So let's just get into our picks. We'll start with all of our up picks. My first pick is Murray State over Eastern Illinois. Murray State has got an 83.2% chance to win.
My first pick, it started at 6:30, so I got it in before 6, and that was one of our main rules. So as long as the game is after 6 o'clock, you're fine. I have U of I, and I actually have them twice, and it's actually kind of sad because this is Illinois State, and I thought I would never do this, but I have U of I over Minnesota at 73.3%. That is my first up pick.
All right, so now that we know that Scotty's a traitor, I'll go with my first up pick. I'm picking Maryland over the University of Iowa, my home state. But Maryland's kicking butt and taking names this season. They're a 73.5% chance to win that game. So we got to go Maryland in that Big Ten action.
And then for my first one, I'm going to keep it here in the MVC, and I'm going to take UNI, who has a 90.9% chance over Evansville. So that is going to be my first up.
And that's your over 80, too.
That's my over 80 as well, yes, sir.
That is over 80. First pick for Steve Cease, he's taking Liberty over Kennesaw State. Liberty, 99.5% chance, so definitely an over 80 pick. My second up pick is the Memphis Tigers over UConn, 70.9%.
I like that pick a lot. I'm going to give you guys my over 80% pick now. Again, it's a from the heart pick. I love those Pac-10 schools. I'm going with Oregon over Cal at 89.7%.
All right, that's 0-2 for Scotty right there. My second up pick, we're going Louisville, going down to NC State. They're only 60.2, so that's a little low for a favorited pick. But I really like what Louisville's doing this season, and I'm not too scared of the Wolfpack.
And then for my second up pick, so I'm going to have Iowa, who has a 68.4% chance over U of I.
Faculty Advisor CC's his second up pick is Austin Peay over Eastern Illinois, 71.2%, excuse me. My final up pick, it's a pick from the Valley. It's UNI over Valparaiso, 72.7%.
I'm going to give you guys my last up pick now. It is Maryland over Iowa at 73.5%.
I can't be mad at that pick, Scotty. That's a good pick. Maybe
so tell me why.
Maybe 1-2.
1-2. All right, my last one. This is going to be my over 80. Dayton hosting Fordham. Dayton obviously having one heck of a year. They're favored at 98.8%, so not too concerned about that one. So I figure that one's going to be a Sherlock. So I'm at least going 1-5 this.
At least 1-5. That's good. So then for my last up pick, it's going to be the Battle of Oklahoma. So then I have Oklahoma with the 67.5% chance over Oklahoma State in the battle for the state. So it's going to be pretty dope.
Steve's final up pick is Southern Illinois over Evansville, 78.5%, so not quite 80. Now moving to our down picks. My first down pick is VCU over Rhode Island. VCU listed at 34.9%.
This one is going to be one that you guys are going to love, and I'm going to take it to the bank. I have at 7.5%.
Oh my goodness.
Hey, 7. Let's just remember, this man is 4-8. He said, I'm coming back.
And it's going to happen with this game. This is going to be a big game, and it's going to be a fun game to watch. The Santa Clara Broncos over the Gonzaga Bulldogs at 7.5%.
Jose just about walked
that
out.
That is
right?
My that's first
be another
down.
Number
that
one
is my first
that's bold.
Down game.
That's bold.
Hey, Scott, you know what? I'll tell you what. If Gonzaga loses that game, Lunch is on me for 2 weeks.
Oh, I'm going to hold you to that.
For 2 weeks.
I'm going to hold you to it. It's recording. So
yeah,
it's recording.
Yep, it's going to be on the website. This is online forever. So hold me to that. My first down game, it's going to be my Missouri Valley game. We're going Indiana State. They're heading into Missouri State. I think they're going to whoop them. It's 37.1 in favor of Indiana. But you know what? The Sycamores got this. They're making the drive from Terre Haute. So they're the best Indiana team in the Valley because Evansville isn't doing anything this year.
You're not wrong about that, Joey. So for my first down one, I'm going to have DePaul over Marquette. And DePaul has a 16% chance of winning that game. I feel like people are sleeping on DePaul, especially in that matchup. DePaul has actually been very good this year, and they have been the talk of the town for the state of Illinois, I think.
They have been, especially the way that they start. Everyone's like they should be ranked. Interesting matchup for my family because my dad went to Marquette. My mom went to DePaul. So that'll be an interesting one. Steve's first down pick, he's taken Arkansas State over Appalachian State, 50.7%. My second down pick, it's barely a down pick, but it is. It is Rutgers who has been lighting it up against the Michigan Wolverines. Rutgers listed 49.5%.
My Pac-12, baby. My Pac-12. Sitting at an easy 500 record of 10-10. We got the UCLA Bruins over Colorado. Colorado is currently ranked 20th in the nation. That game is at 25.8%.
Okay.
That's my second down pick.
Okay, I was just... Okay, okay. Next, I'm actually going to pick against UCLA here. Scotty, for those of you who don't know, Scotty's moving out to California later this year, so he's going to be a beach bum here in a second, so I got to take the shots while I can. But Utah's heading down to Southern California to take on UCLA. They've got a 41.1% chance of winning it, and I think they're gonna make some quick work of the Bruins.
And I agree with you on that, and you know I'm going to go back to one that Freddie has already said. I have VCU over the Rhode Island Rams with the 42.9% chance, so I'm agreeing with that one on you, Freddie. I think they're going to definitely upset.
I think so. And another pick that Steve is agreeing with me on, and keep in mind we don't see each other's picks before we do this segment. He's taking Rutgers over Michigan as well. My final down pick, I'm going in the Pac-12. I'm so sorry, Scott. I'm taking Utah over UCLA, 44.5%.
That's what we like to hear.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I'm going to give you my last down pick. And not only is it my last down pick, it's my Missouri Valley Conference pick. Joey, for the first time in a long time, I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go with Indiana State over Missouri State. That's at, like you said, 37.1%. That's my last down pick.
Let's just realize that Scott said for the first time in a long time he's going to agree with me, even though 3 minutes ago we agreed on the Maryland-Iowa pick.
That's
wow.
True. It's true.
So I'm just saying. It's a long time. Hey, 3 minutes is a long time radio time.
I picked that before. You know what? Yeah, it is.
I
got to check it out. Yep.
All right, my last down pick is going to be Wisconsin. They're hosting Michigan State, 38.8%, but the Badgers are looking quite good this season.
And then for my last down pick, so I'm going to have North Carolina over Florida State. And North Carolina has a 15.7% chance to win that game. I think North Carolina is finally going to get it back together. Cole Anthony's going to have a huge game that game, and they're going to get it back on track and actually be the great team that they are.
Alrighty. Steve's final pick, he is looking for Tulsa to shock the Shockers of Wichita State. They're listed 51.6%, or that is Wichita, excuse me. So that looks like that will just about wrap it up for this week's edition of the Red Zone. A big thank you to our news and sports guest, Jose Sandoval, for being on the show with us, talking about Kobe Bryant's legacy, not only as an athlete, but as an international sensation. Also, a big thank you to Cameron Topp of Redbird Gymnastics for coming to discuss the team's success thus far. And if you miss any portion of tonight's show, the entire podcast will be available online shortly at WZND.com. Don't forget to head to WZND at WZND Sports on Twitter to take part in our weekly poll. That'll just about do it. We'll be back next week with another news and sports guest and a bunch of other segments to talk about. For Scott Rosala and Joey Dwyer, I am Anthony Ferretti. You have been listening to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of the Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.